Welcome back to another episode of City Hall Pass. I'm Kapel Lungani, counsel to the mayor of New York City. We created this forum, the first of its kind in New York City, to give you, the public, a unique window into the highest levels of our city government. We interview New York City's finest public servants and get them to open up in a way that is both deeply personal and insightful. And on its best days, we hope that our podcast is equal parts educational and inspiring. And now I want to introduce my two co-hosts today, two brilliant women who inspire me every day, Bess Chu and Kate Coughlin.
Thanks, Kapel. Happy to be here. This is Bess Chu. I'm currently Chief of Staff to the Office of the Counsel to the Mayor.
Hi, I'm Kate Coughlin, and I currently serve as Deputy Counsel for the Office of the Counsel to the Mayor.
I'm excited to introduce our guest for this episode, the Executive Director of the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey, Rick Cotton. Rick became the Executive Director of the Port Authority in 2017. Prior to joining the Port Authority, since 2015, Rick served as New York State's Special Counselor for Interagency Initiatives, serving as the point person within the Governor's Office for most of the Governor's major downstate infrastructure priorities, including LaGuardia and JFK airports, the Moynihan Train Hall, the new Tappan Zee Bridge, the expansion of the Javits Center, and the MTA Second Avenue subway project. Mr. Cotton joined the administration following 25 years at NBC Universal, where he held numerous senior-level positions, including 20 years as EVP and General Counsel, and 4 years in London as President and Managing Director of CNBC Europe. He also served as Executive Secretary at the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, and Special Assistant for Renewable Energy to the Deputy Secretary of Energy at the U.S. Department of Energy. We spoke to Rick about his deep-rooted passion for public service, his approach to managing multi-billion-dollar infrastructure projects, the future of our airports and bridges, and much more. We hope you enjoy.
I want to give a very warm City Hall Pass welcome to the Executive Director of the Port Authority, Rick Cotton. Rick, thank you so much for joining us today.
Good to be with you.
Rick, you grew up on the South Side of Chicago in a family of liberal Democrats who lived and breathed public issues. Your father was a labor union lawyer, and your mother started a nonprofit for children and families. Can you talk a little bit about your childhood and what it was like growing up in the Cotton household?
Well, it was certainly filled with discussion about public issues. Both my parents, they were liberal Democrats. They were passionate about the issues of the day. My mother, I would say, she was the president of every PTA, of every school that I went to. She was a born campaigner, and she was deeply involved in the campaign at the time for integration of Chicago public schools, and evolved in terms of her belief in the need for high quality childcare in order for women to be able to work. So the household was filled with discussions about the and debates about the Chicago politics and the world around us.
Did you always know growing up that you were likely to spend a significant amount of time in public service?
Well, I was certainly focused on politics, on government. I would say by the time I was in high school, in the back of my mind was I wanted to be a senator from Illinois at some point. That changed and evolved in terms of ambition, but politics was always front and center. I actually also wound up with spending a significant amount of time on my school newspapers. And actually, there was 1 year when I worked for Newsweek magazine as a reporter. The journalistic focus on politics was also part of the worldview.
Rick, I want to turn a little bit to your post-law school career. After graduating from law school, you clerked for the Honorable Judge Skelly Wright of the U.S. Court of Appeals and Justice Brennan of the U.S. Supreme Court, after which you worked in public interest and served under President Carter's administration. Justice Brennan is considered one of the most influential Supreme Court justices of our time. What did you learn from him?
Well, he was an extraordinary individual. There are many lessons. One was, I believe, that one of the central qualities of a good judge is empathy. And he embodied that. He was not only in terms of how he related to individuals, but how he looked at cases, which was he began with the actual plaintiff or defendant involved in the case, and then thought about the case in that framework. He was obviously animated by the notion of applying constitutional values to today's world, and was very, very thoughtful. And I think that was a great part of his legacy and a great part of the Warren Court's legacy. Much of that obviously is under attack today. But in terms of working with him, he was He was the combination of empathetic about individuals and about interests involved in the cases in front of him, but incredibly focused on detail, incredibly focused on writing and on expressing his analysis and his ultimately his views and his votes. There are two things I guess I would say about him also, which is he was very fond of saying that a lot of people come up to me and say, oh my goodness, Mr. Justice, being a justice of the Supreme Court must be really difficult and really complicated. And his favorite answer to that was, actually, that's not true. It's very, very simple. All you really have to know is how to count to five.
So after you finished clerking for the Supreme Court, you also worked for many years in public service, including some years at the U.S. Department of Health, Education, and Welfare during the Carter administration. You also spent a number of years, about 25 years at NBC Universal, serving in several different roles, including as general counsel. I know in our role as counsel to the mayor, general counsel to the mayor's office, we face a lot of unique legal challenges. So, for example, we've been looking into how to mandate vaccinations for city workers or helping to stand up test and trace during the COVID pandemic. You were at NBC when streaming services really began to emerge and become, I think, a very significant part of entertainment and media today. And I think that raises a lot of issues of, you know, intellectual property. How did you face and address these, you know, new, unique legal challenges?
Well, if you went back to the time, NBC at the point at which I joined it was just the NBC network, a broadcast network, and six owned and operated broadcast stations. And the first step in expanding that portfolio was to create a business news channel, CNBC. So it's almost hard to remember that world. It was the time at which cable channels were proliferating. There had been three broadcast networks. The 1980s were because of communication satellite technology. You know, the cable operators were able to have their own cable networks. So the technological change that began at that point and has continued at an astonishing rate of speed makes both the technology and the business almost unrecognizable, which was interesting. It was made for a lot of interesting legal issues. It meant that the company was changing, the business was changing, the technology was changing. So it was a fascinating world in which to practice law, to be a legal advisor. One of the challenges as media moved to the internet, it wasn't really the beginning of streaming services, but it was the beginning of the ability to access video and other content over the internet. Intellectual property issues and internet piracy became an enormous focus. Law enforcement at that time simply was behind the curve. Government generally struggles to keep up with the private markets. I think that's one of the great challenges for government, which is to keep up and to have the skills inside the government that people have the capability to monitor and to intervene and to form policy with respect to a fast-moving external.
Do you think companies like NBC and the traditional networks have adapted to this influx of multimedia operations like Netflix, the Hulus of the world?
Well, they're absolutely in the process of adapting. Some are doing better than others. One of the contrasts, by the way, in terms of the private world and the public world, is that the private world, when it faces changes like the internet, like streaming, if the private world, which is profit-based, doesn't figure it out, there's a real discipline and there's real consequences. And the pressure on the private organization and the discipline, whatever you think of capitalism or profitability, in terms of an organization, it brings an enormous discipline because there's a real measure of success and failure. In the government, you don't quite have that. So you have to create it in terms of what are metrics, what is it to perform well, and how do you bring that discipline inside the organization to adapt to change?
How have you done that?
You have to set out a vision. You have to wind up with a consensus as to what are the metrics by which the organization should be measured. And you have to adopt communication to say to people, these are our objectives. The organization has to then have goals. What do we want to accomplish either in the near term or longer term? If you take a capital project, a construction project, pretty straightforward, which is it needs to come in on time and on budget. But if you're going to have a sustainability initiative, it needs to become, we're going to accomplish X by a certain time. If you've got a diversity and inclusion set of objectives, hiring minority and women-owned business contracts, it's a numbers game. I probably say this a lot. People will tell me inside the organization I see it too much. You don't get any credit for effort. It's harsh, but you don't get any credit for effort. What you get credit for is actually getting balls across the goal line, hitting numbers. So if you've got a minority and women-owned business objective, did you do it? Look at each project. And so you have to look at the organization and communicate. What are the metrics? What are the expectations? You have to measure. And I would say the final thing is that people need to understand two things. One is that you value their success, that their work is important, but that also you're monitoring, you're measuring, you're counting, and that there's a real expectation of performance.
Yeah. And accountability.
And accountability.
When you came back to public work in 2015, you essentially became the czar of infrastructure for New York State and, you know, took with you, of course, your experiences both previously working in public sector, but also your many years working in the private sector. When you first came back to New York State and became the czar, what was the most meaningful project, or what was the project that you were most excited to work on?
Well, I came to work New York State in the governor's office at a time where Governor Cuomo had really set an extraordinary set of ambitions in terms of infrastructure projects. The position I wound up in was being the governor's office point person on most of the large downstate infrastructure projects. It's hard to pick a favorite, but I would say, I mean, the list of which I would say I really worked hardest in terms of advancing them with on time, on budget, high civic architecture framework was the Tappan Zee Bridge, now the Mario Cuomo Bridge, completing the Second Avenue subway had been under construction, even this first section, for a long time. And the challenge was to finish it on time. So I came in near the end. Lots of work obviously had been done by the MTA previously, but it was behind schedule. And so the effort over the last year and a half before the deadline for its finish was a major intervention in terms of wanting it to come in on time. It did, hence the New Year's Eve party to celebrate that. The Moynihan train station was a major effort. Again, these are projects that have long histories and then they have long construction projects. So many people are involved. But the Moynihan station project had been talked about for 25 to 30 years and had never achieved forward momentum. Pieces had been put in place. But the period that I worked on it was a point at which the final pieces of the deal involving six different public agencies, two major private developers, got put together in order for it to finally move forward. And then the Port Authority projects, LaGuardia Airport, the Terminal A at Newark, major. These are multi-billion dollar projects. And next year is actually going to be a big year for both those projects because that is the completion dates for those. And seeing those really get to the point where they've gone from standing start to actually now finishing up. And then we're working very hard to get JFK Airport redevelopment transformation underway. So those are the major projects, very visible, very hard, but now really with momentum, they're at different stages. But it's very satisfying to see that.
Rick, in 2017, you were appointed to lead the Port Authority, the largest bi-state agency in the country. It oversees five airports, four bridges and tunnels, the second largest seaport, and of course, the World Trade Center campus. The Port Authority was founded in 1921 during World War I and was focused on developing and modernizing the Port District of New York and New Jersey. You've now spent several years as the head of this organization. Based on your experience and what you know now, if you had the opportunity to reorganize or re-envision the authority, how would you structure it?
Well, as you point out, it has really an extraordinary range of facilities that it operates. And the organization at this point has five operating divisions, which are tailored to the different facilities that you operate. So I think any organization that you think of, it really has to rest on those five operating organizations because it is everything from a seaport, a commuter railroad, the World Trade Center site, the airports, seaport, and then the bridges and tunnels, and not to mention the bus terminal, which is also the largest and busiest bus terminal in the world. So I don't think I would change the operating entities. Now, all those are supported by roughly a dozen staff departments that have specific specialties from finance to law to technology to security. What we've done, and which I think is helpful, is to have, and this has been an organizational feature of the organization for a while, is to have a chief operating officer supervising operations of the five operating departments. I think you need to think a bit about, as the world changes, for example, as cybersecurity becomes much more prominent, much more threatening, how do you organize to be sure that this large organization adapts to a new technology world and a new set of threats? In fact, we're going through that discussion right now. So I think looking at the staff support structures is what I would tend to do, and try to think where there are synergies and where there are really new challenges which need to have new, very specific sets of expertise, have both more clarity, more prominence within the organization.
So you had mentioned, you know, the various pillars that the Port Authority oversees, and the Port Authority is obviously a massive institution with several dozen employees. I mean, you have your own engineers, you have your own police department. What are the keys to, you know, in order to close out these massive billion-dollar projects and on time, you need to be able to motivate and manage really well all these various employees. What are the keys to successfully managing such a large and diverse staff?
I think many different people have different styles which are successful for them. What I would say about how I think about it is I think of having mentors and having had experiences of watching others manage large organizations. I just think of myself in terms of management as having had two extraordinary examples of watching people in action. And that's a combination. It is a vision. You have to be clear with people where one is trying to get to. There's a vision for the whole organization. There's a vision down to very particular challenges. And then once people have an understanding of where the organization, whether it's the whole organization or a component of it, is trying to get to, then it becomes a question of being sure that people have figured out, well, how do we get from A to B? And then it becomes a question of accountability. Is the organization, whether it's an individual or whether it's a team, are they making progress? And the final piece I would say is, which I think is very important, is that the image you have to give to people is that one is always trying to move up the curve, that on an annual basis, on an individual basis. And that's part of the thought process, which is how do we both move along? How do we do it better than we've done it before? Communicating to people that you take notice. You take notice in positive cases. You take notice if people are falling short. And these are enormously complicated projects. These are enormously complicated policy goals. But it has to come down to, where are we trying to get to? Break that down in terms of how we get from A to B. And then I give compliments when compliments are due. Take note of progress that is too slow. And then try to help. Be supportive. I'll finish on one note, which is, if you're in the middle of an organization and you're accomplishing something depends on what someone else in another organization does, pick an example of a construction project, a utility is not responding quickly enough and it's holding up progress. Well, someone in the middle of the organization, what are they supposed to do? They can call their counterparties, but the reason that the third party organization isn't doing anything is that people at their level aren't being responsive. So you also have to have this culture that if there's a problem that you can't solve, there's no embarrassment to that. You have to raise it up, and the organization as a whole then has to help. And so all those things have to work together. But it's that being paralyzed because there's a disagreement here, a disagreement there, there's a third party outside, that the organization has to work to say, I can't get this done. And here's the reasons. The organization going all the way up to the top has to say, we're gonna succeed or fail together. And if you can get all that working and you can get a real attention to detail and get people to focus on each project and each aspect as it comes up, at least in my experience, that's how you get things done.
So recently, you know, I've been noticing a lot of supernatural infrastructure activity. I really wish there was someone we could call to deal with this. Rick Cotton! Something strange on the GWB. Who are you gonna call? Rick Cotton! You need to fly through NYC. Who are you gonna call? Rick Cotton! I ain't afraid of no tolls. Okay, so if you couldn't figure out the supernatural infrastructure activity game, we are going to give you two options and you're gonna pick one. So first, tennis or running?
Tennis.
Journalism or law?
Tough. Law.
East Side or West Side?
Also tough, but I have to say East Side and be honest.
Right. LGA or JFK?
Tough. Can't choose between your children.
All right. Last but not least, White Sox or Cubs?
That's easy. White Sox.
All right. Well, thanks for playing.
Thanks, Rick. Indeed. Rick, we want to thank you so much for joining us today. We could talk to you, frankly, for hours. Your career in the public sector and private sector has inspired us and inspired countless other people throughout the city and state. And we want to thank you for your great public service and all the extraordinary accomplishments you've been a part of during your public service career. And thank you for spending time out of your very busy schedule talking to us today.
Well, thanks for those kind words. And it's been great talking with you.
I want to thank our guest, the Executive Director of the Port Authority, Rick Cotton, for joining us on City Hall Pass. We hope you enjoyed this conversation and look forward to talking to you soon on another episode of City Hall Pass.
This podcast is brought to you by the Office of the Counsel to the Mayor of New York City.